All right, so welcome, everyone. I am Jay Dedden is my name, and I used to work at MNN at Manhattan Neighborhood It's Network. I left there about 4 months ago, but my heart is still with the station and with public access. But we and the new opportunities that we as public access as workers have to offer them. And the reason why I think this is important is because at public access stations, I know my biggest problem was, how do I find producers and keep them? You know, because without having producers in your station actively making content, you become irrelevant if they aren't there. So with these new opportunities with the internet, what can we offer them to bring them in and keep them and excite them? And that's what we're here to talk about. Let me do a bit of a spiel here to intro the panel and to intro this session here. The way I like to think about this, because I feel like a lot of the conversations I've heard around here is that, you know, now with things like it's YouTube and there are these internet sites where people can upload its video, it's like us versus them, like it becomes like the internet versus cable access, and it's not. The way I like to see it is like it's what we already have plus more. So you got to think of distribution of beyond just your channels. Your TV channel, which has traditionally been, you know, what public access has been about, should now just be one part of your toolkit that you can offer people. So this is not, again, this is a positive thing. And one thing I want to give to you guys is the language to be able to go back to your station to talk about this stuff, to your producers, to your managers, or to your board, or to your executives, you know? This is, because I know that a lot of what we're going to talk about, you have to sell to the people you to work with, and that's really important. So like I said, the problem is that we now live in a world where I can be in my bedroom, make a video on like a little $200 camera and upload it to a site like it's YouTube and get more distribution than I could on my public access station and not have to go through the its bureaucracy of taking a class and getting access to equipment and figuring out how to get it scheduled and blah, blah, blah. So how do we not fight against that, but how do we deal with the its reality that is here? And so we must evolve. And again, this is not a bad thing. If you're willing to change, it's actually a really cool thing. And I've got a great line of people here that are going to help explain how they are taking advantage of this. So we have a real opportunity, public access stations, to innovate. You know, traditionally, public access stations have, for the most part, have had to wait till the big broadcast companies get the new equipment and the new technology, and then it kind of trickles down to us. You know, it gets cheaper and cheaper, and then we get it, and we're always like behind the mainstream, it's media. No longer has to be that way because of these web-based technologies. We can actually innovate faster now than the major media companies, CNN, whatever, NBC, because the big key is we don't have to worry about copyright so much, you know? Like, they are really being slowed down because, you know, when they have a show like Friends or, you know, some show, like, they can't just put it out there everywhere because they have to deal with all the copyright issues and who's going to get paid. We can take our content and we can put it anywhere. And that's a really huge thing that you got to read its members. So we can take advantage of these technologies much faster than they can, and that's powerful. And because many of our stations become the only local voice in our communities, we also have that power as well. So, you know, keep that in mind. Another thing is that I really want to get across is that, you know, traditionally public access stations are its fiefdoms, you know. And when I say a fiefdom is like the 16th century, like all these castles everywhere, and everyone's kind of their own little castle and worries about their own little local communities, and people don't really work together. You know, we all come here and we all we all like to have a big group hug, and you know, and then we all go back to our own stations, and then that's it. And then we have to deal with our own local problems and our local boards, and you know, and because you're getting money from your local cable company, why should you be talking to anybody else? That has to change if we want to survive. And we can do that with the kind of technology we're going to talk about today. So those of you who work at stations where maybe you're the only employee, or it's you and like two part-time people, you know, don't feel like you're going to get left in its dust. It's quite the opposite. You now have the opportunity to take advantage of a lot of the things going on and really make yourself seem a lot bigger than you actually are. And you do that because you start connecting to the bigger stations. And someone corrected me that maybe it's not that you connect to the bigger stations, but you connect to the more able stations. But some stations have started to innovate a lot faster and you know, have hired on staff people that get it a lot quicker. And you can just piggyback on their knowledge there. And we do that just through the internet. Email lists, you know, we can there's a couple cool projects here that are being built that are open source, so the code is open source, and they'll just give it to you, and they could help you install it and make these things happen. So, again, I hope that people during this event or this whole conference, starting to talk to each other, start getting emails from each other, you know, come talk to me afterwards. If you're someone progressive and you want to really move forward, come talk to me, and I'll hook you into a network we're creating, and you'll get all the support and help you can need. I mentioned this before, but PEG stations need to diversify its media. You know, I know that your everyone's contract says, you know, that you need to put media on the cable channels, and that's its mission. But if you stick to that little narrow its mission that maybe got set up 5-10 years ago, you're in trouble, because there are too many other places to put its media. And that's why I say it's the channels plus. Put them on the channels because your franchise agreement says that you have to, but it doesn't say that it can't go anyplace else. So you need to be proactive and start getting this media out to other places, you know? And that is like the internet, and even sharing programming with your regional stations, or even it's nationally, okay? We're at a really interesting time because the web enables people to do so many cool things. You know, a site like it's YouTube should not be a scary thing. If anything, it should be an example of how amazing a time we're in, where it's basically a website with a lot of its servers. It's magic. But because of the power of the internet, they're getting, it's literally hundreds of hours of programming uploaded to their site every day, and they've got, you know, thousands upon thousands of users watching their stuff. And that's amazing. And they're, you know, affecting the media its landscape. And there's no reason why we couldn't do the same thing. And we can bring the knowledge we've gained over the past 25 years about community building and actually making media that hopefully affects change. And these things, we can start actually to become, it's relevant. I know at MNN, we had some really good programming, but I was always a little bit sad that sometimes our programming wasn't as relevant as it could be. So when an event happened, very often we couldn't, our producers, just because of the cycle of how we set things up, they couldn't get their programming on fast enough to take advantage of what is in people's minds, because they're watching mainstream its media, and sometimes their show would take a couple weeks to a month before it would get on the air, and then it's a little bit too late to get involved in conversation. So the things we're going to talk about today is ways where your producers could start getting stuff on the air ASAP, other than live talk shows, which is always a powerhouse for public access stations. But you know, we're talking about how do you bring people in who are making video at home with, you know, again, very inexpensive equipment, and maybe not need your equipment, but may need you to help them distribute. So the reason why this is all possible is because of this. I'll give you a little history. It's lesson. I've had the unfortunate experience to become a geek because I've had to learn all this, you know, all these computer things. And I've learned that what happened was, it was about 25 years ago, there were two its movements going on. There's our public access its movement here, this open TV. And then there was this open source computer coding community that started up. And, you know, they all went to California and started building what we all know is the internet and Apple and Microsoft and all that. And then we started building these, and we started building this network of TV stations. But unfortunately, they separated and they haven't really talked to each other. And now is a time where we can bring them together. Because the open source computer community, they're building software that's open and free and that's enabling people. And that's the stuff that we need. We need those people. And that community is there, and it's a matter of tapping into them. And actually, a couple of them are here that can talk about it. And we can talk about how you and your community, there are plenty of people probably that live in your neighborhoods and your communities that know how to do the stuff you need done. And you can just ask them for help. And they would love to come to your station and, you know, quote unquote, build a TV station. They would love to come and do some coding for you, maybe do some installing for you. And they have the fervor, just like a lot of your public access TV producers who want to make its media. So that's a good thing. And so that just brings my last thing again, is that those of you who are here, maybe you're the only, it's worker, or it's you and a couple other people, so you're like, how do I do this? I mean, one thing you got to do is you got to get interns, you know? And if you have to hire anyone, maybe you hire an intern coordinator, you know? And someone, it's mentioned it in an earlier panel, where you start getting work done after 4 o'clock. After the high school kids are out of school, get them into your station. They'll set up its Linux servers for you. They'll like be doing all the stuff that you could never do. And they'll want to do it because, you know why? It's just, it's toys, you know? And the great thing is that these computers and all this equipment, you don't got to go to that vendor room over there and buy a $50,000 turnkey package that locks you into a proprietary format. What we're talking about is that us sharing code that is free, that can be built upon, and that can grow. So again, all the things I'm talking about are not dependent on that stuff. Okay? Let me introduce you to my panel here. Jacob is ready and works at MNN, and he, for lack of a better word, I guess runs your IT department, but he does a lot more than that. Sean Van Every is from NYU, from ITP, so he is not, he doesn't work at a public access station, but he's partnering with MNN to do a lot of cool stuff. And that's why I say, like, you got to reach out. And Jacob reached out to a local college, which was NY, it's you, and getting some help. Ann Tice works at MNN as well, and she runs a production department there. And she's going to talk about how you start to introduce these things to your producers who maybe are still dealing with, like, VHS tapes and stuff. So we all know it's a real challenge. And we have Aaron Valdez, who is from Iowa, a public access station there, and he also works with the production and programming. It's a smaller station, so it's a good example of what many of it you might be from, and how you also introduce this to your community. But he's been doing some cool things with its mapping, and how it's you show how you merge video online with maps and start to visually represent what's going on in your community. So here's its vision as I see it that we're going to try and sketch out for you. I talked to some of you beforehand, and if you were like, I don't know anything about anything. I don't know about blogging. I don't know any of the words. We're going to have to use some words just because we have to. Some of you might be a little more advanced. But we have an hour and a half here, so we have a lot of question time. And again, you won't learn everything right now. This might be a beginner for some of you, and some of you, you know, we're going to bring you up real fast. But the vision is this. You get a producer coming in, and you teach them a video editing class, right? You get them to make a 5-minute video, and then you get them to make a video blog where they put this video on the internet on their own blog, and then you also help them make like a map, or you put them on your own map, and then you start building an institutional memory of the media your station is making. And then you can take that to any Time Warner board or any of your executive board and start showing them what you're doing. Because I think to me that's always been a real problem, is that, you know, TV is ephemeral. It's built to be that way. Commercial TV is built to be ephemeral. You aren't supposed to remember what's going on. So when a scandal comes up now, you're supposed to forget about it in a year when the next scandal happens, so you can't be connecting those dots. And for community, it's media, that's I think been a real negative thing. Because like MNN, we have a 25-year history, but when a new producer comes in today, we don't have anything to show these people that there's been 25 years of people before them that have had the same feelings and sympathies and ideas. But we can do that now by using the technology as we have. So let's go to our panel, and they're going to present some stuff to you, and then we're going to open it up and have a conversation. All right? Any initial questions? Like, am I?
Your name?
Jay. Deadman. Dead man. Any other questions? Okay, we're going to jump into this. I promised Anne I wouldn't make her go first, but I think I'm going to. So, Anne, if you could just, because I think you're the best person to go first, and just talk about your experience as, because I used to work, it's with a hand, you know, don't you remember when, like, you know, I'm talking about It's Video Blog and everyone thinks I'm crazy, and like we have producers who are still like Lena, you know, she's still on like VHS, you know, how do we introduce that to the public and kind of talk about your experience?
Hi. I guess, yeah, Jay's right. I mean, he was the first person at MNN that got into this crazy thing called video blogging, and he started telling the rest of us, the staff, about it, and first we kind of laughed at him, and, you know, but eventually we're like, wow, this is really cool. This is something that's immediate. Like, I don't have to spend, you know, 2 weeks shooting, planning, shooting, going out, editing, and then, you know, submitting it for air, blah, 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 blah. It might take like a month or two to get the whole complete process done. But instead, like, something happens in the community. There's a protest, there's a rally, there's an event, there's something, whatever it is, something in your life, something in the community, and boom, you know, you can just edit together in, a couple hours or however long you want to spend editing it, and you can post it up and, you know, within a half an hour, it's up there on the web, and you can, you know, send emails out for people to go and look at it. So the staff started to realize that this was really cool, and we needed to figure out a way to bridge what we were doing at MNN and the normal production process and link those two things together. So at times there was, you know, people that thought, you know, this was crazy and that this was like a competition between the normal way of producing a program and what's everything that's online. But eventually, like, you know, we came to realize and got most people convinced that that's not a competition, that this needs to be a marriage, that we need to go back and forth, that we need to pull content, great content that's on the internet that's being posted up there because people don't want to spend the time to make a 28 or a 58-minute program. And that they shouldn't be excluded from the access world because they have short format. But at the same time, people who do have the standard format, that they should be able to also utilize the internet to promote their show, to show clips of their show, to archive their shows. You know, this is a great place where everything can be centrally located, and it's all free. You know, you can. There's plenty of Blip TV, R Media. There's plenty of places that will host all this video content for free.
I think that's a big point, is that, I mean, again, we are not trying to sell it you into any new thing you have to buy, you know? Everything we're talking about is web-based, and there's so many free resources out there. The blogs are free. The hosting is free. Everything is free. The only thing you need to do is just basically teach producers how to connect to those free things.
So basically, I just wanted to, if you, in the packet that was on your chair, You know, I just kind of created like a little outline of, you know, what the process was that we went through at MNN, just so that, you know, this is something you could think about and figure out how this could work for your station. You know, so the first thing what I just talked about was creating awareness. Basically training your staff, getting your staff involved, getting your staff comfortable with the technology. And again, remember, you know, even if you only have a small staff, this started with one person. This started with Jay, getting people interested and involved. Get your volunteers, get your interns, get your producers excited about it. And one of the first things you could do just for practicing is to create your own access, you know, your own, make a link to your website, and just basically create a blog yourself. Check it out, see what it's like. You know, this is an example here of one of our department, the community media department. They have their own blog, and they basically just, when they go out and do things with the community groups, or if there's a protest or anything like that, they basically, they'll post it up there. And then they have links to various other things. And then the second thing that we did was, okay, now this blog here was created just as a blog for people who complete our field and editing track. So everybody in that track has to create a 5-minute project. So that was like a perfect opportunity to introduce producers to what blogging can be, because normally we just aired it on the channel and we had to call them up and say, okay, your 5-minute piece is going to be sometime within this half hour on September 22nd at 2 o'clock. Now we could say, you know, you can watch it on this time, but also tell all your friends and family that they can just go to mnnmovies.blogspot.com and they can look at your what you did for the class. So things like that, little things like that, it gets them excited. And then, you know, and then you got to, you know, keep the excitement going. And the next thing we did was Jay and some of the other staff put together a vlogging panel. They had discussions. They had producers who were already interested in blogging talk about it. They had people come in from the community talk about it, show what they did. Just let people ask questions, you know, because people just don't know and they're really curious.
I think that's a super important point. So if you want to start bringing this into your community, if you do an event-based, so reach out to your local bloggers. You can contact me. I probably know some video bloggers in your area, and get them and just have an event and have like a panel like this. Get them to show stuff and then like have a little cookies and punch afterwards where people are just talking to each other. And trust me, if you tell producers, we will get your stuff on the internet, they will just, they won't get away from you. They want to know how to do this. So.
So then during that panel, we were basically, by the time we had the panel, we were ready to launch an actual hands-on vlogging class. So at that panel, we announced that, you know, starting like next week or in 2 weeks, we're going to actually have these classes. So please come and sign up. So we had, I mean, I don't remember, like dozens of people that were ready to sign up immediately. So it's been about 4 months since we've been doing the class, and we've had probably 70 to 80 people go through the classes so far. So people are really interested, and, you know, they really want to do it. You know, so that's just like, that was, oh, and by the way, just so you guys know, the curriculum that we use for the vlogging class is, was on your chair. So, you know, yeah. You guys, you know, you don't have to, like...
Those of you who couldn't get access to it, we are going to make, it's 50 copies, and there could be some more floating around up here. But we will post these to a website so you can download them and use them for later as well. So,
yeah, or you can email any, you know, Jay or I. So basically you don't have to, like, you know, the point is that you don't have to, you know, start from scratch. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's already here. It's very simple. It's just, you know, step-by-step guide. And then, let's see. So basically we got that going. Now we're working on phase two of teaching the classes, which is we're working on creating a digital storytelling workshop that we're going to merge with the vlogging class so that, you know, you don't have just, you know, because the vlogging part of the class is just sort of like the end result, the final step that you do. So what we're now trying to do is go back to that, you know, project-based learning and making sure that we teach people how to tell short stories, you know, because you don't, we want to also keep the content level high, like, you know, what they're talking about. And, you know, sometimes people have a hard time figuring out how to say something in 5 minutes. So, you know, when you create a class like a digital storytelling workshop, you give them the tools to understand how to tell things in a very short format. And then we'll teach them how to post and everything at the end of that class.
And I always found when we were teaching these classes, when we started teaching people just how to make 5-minute projects, people were much more excited. You know, the reason why a lot of public access shows are crap is because they take a 5-minute idea that we force them to stretch out into half hour or an hour. You know, I mean, some people want to do that, and that's fine, but because we make them fit this long format, when they can make a 5-minute story, it's tight, it's watchable, and it's usually really interesting. So,
and if it's not, it's over very quickly. So that's sort of you know, where we are with the classes right now. Additional outlets, some other things that we've created. A couple staff members and I have created a thing called Vlog TV, where we're trying again to like bridge that gap between what's online and what's on the channel, so that basically, you know, because right now we don't have any way to just play back a 5-minute project, a 2-minute project, a 7-minute project. So what we're doing is asking for people to submit their vlogs, and then we have an hour long show, and we'll basically just kind of play them back like video jukebox style, or, you know, just like,
it's current TV or something.
Yeah, just, you know, so, and talk, maybe, you know, if we take calls and talk about issues, things like that. So, you know, that's something you can do to start getting into your programming, so there isn't that gap, you know, because you don't want to, I know that, you know, it's very tough to walk that line, giving people classes, giving people resources, but you have to always get the programming back. So it's very important to find ways to incorporate these things into the actual playback on the channels. And then there's going to be other things that these guys are going to talk about, like Snippets TV. So that's going to be really interesting. And then also one other thing we're thinking about right now is holding an actual vlogging festival at our station. So that way, you know, we're in Manhattan. There's tons of vlogging going on. But we need, you know, not only do we need to take, you know, introduce our producers to the world of vlogging, but we need to get the vloggers to know about Access, because they're going to be the future content providers. You know, we need to get them in and see that we have resources for them, that, you know, that we're, you know, a great center for them, a great base for them.
Okay. That's cool. So, yeah, question, go. If it's quick or...
Well, yeah. No.
Okay.
When you were talking about showing stuff on the web and on the channel, I was curious about the quality of the video. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes you compress stuff to put online, and then getting it... I was curious if you were getting it back from the web, or you're getting your producers to both put online and submit something else from the channel, mm-hmm.
Right now we've been just like taking it right off the internet and playing it back, but we're not playing it completely full screen, so it's maybe like 3/4 screen, which is nice because we haven't done a taped version yet, we've just gone live, but you can put like CG up and you could actually say like the link of the, you know, the site that it's on, or the name of the producer, or, you know, and it looks kind of cool, it looks different than regular TV, so you can tell that it's something that's unique looking.
And plus, you do have to teach people how to compress things well. And like, we, in this handout, which we'll put online, it goes through that. But really, NTSC is so horrible that compressed, its video blown up looks fine. Like, it looks better than VHS tapes, which is probably a lot of what's on your channel anyway. So it's not an issue.
What we do at our station is... when somebody's working on a project in an editing bay, they'll export a full quality DV file, and then they'll also make like a compressed version at the same time. So we'll have both of those. We'll have a full quality for air, and then we'll have a compressed version that I'll make.
Resi AV
that
guy.
We can put on the website. So, I mean, there are options for people that are producing stuff in your station. You can do full quality and compressed. And people outside, you can always ask them to submit like a mini DV copy, as well as putting a link to wherever their video is hosted on your website. So there's still a lot of options.
So, are you hoping that, like,
Cinema
just said, like,
I mean, it's just to have an alternative. It's not that, you know, we'd want to go completely like a short format or anything like that, but it's just that, so there's alternatives because, like what Jay said before, it's like, you know, sometimes, you know, people come in, you know, they're coming in brand new, they say something, you know, we tell them, well, what's your idea? And they tell us, and we're like, that is, you know, that doesn't sound like a 28-minute idea.
I mean, haven't you ever had this problem where, like, a producer comes in and they're just excited because they want to get involved, and then you teach them how to use a camera, and then you're like, okay, go out and make a half-hour TV show alone. You know, it's like they're overwhelmed, and very often they don't come back. And so now we can say, make a 2-minute its video, make a 5-minute its video, interview your grandma, you know, for 5 minutes, and we'll make it tight, and then it's much more manageable. And those people that want to make long form television already know what to do. So we're just trying to make it, again, this is community TV plus. Okay. Sir.
As a virgin on this subject, could you tell me what the difference is between vlogging and vlogging and blogging?
Good question. A little factoid here. Blogging is text, and vlogging is video. That's all. It's all this, yeah.
I just wanted to say one thing, back to the compression thing and the quality. I mean, this is a great opportunity for people to understand what compression is and how quality. So it's one way you can start teaching them, because they will have to know it. Most people shooting on mini DV now that goes into a DV file format, do they even know that's DV? What's MPEG-2, what's MPEG-4? It's a way to start teaching them what these things are. But I get this question all the time about quality. I mean, right now at M&N, we're rebuilding our mass control to allow digital. So we're trying to get rid of some old legacy equipment and get some new stuff. I talk to vendors all the time, and they're like, you must do MPEG-2. You have to be high quality, things like that. And my greatest example is, I don't know if anybody's watched Current TV, but Current TV's, it's a nationwide, big-time commercial television station. They air all across the country. They're showing things right now that are filmed on cell phones, and they're making money off of it. So if they're willing to put a cell phone quality video on their station, I think we should be able to put,
I mean, you know. We all know that there is a myth of broadcast quality. This is a myth that the network started, and we know it is not true. So really, if the video is intriguing and engaging, then people will watch. Okay. So before I get to Aaron here, who's going to show us something, I just want to remember, or to put into our minds, like, what the problem is. So, you know, the problem is, historically, is that we put on so much programming that just gets forgotten. You know, the archives of our stations are in people's closets. You know, they're in people's, you know, in trash bags even. You know, I mean, unfortunately, because we just cannot archive this stuff. But again, Aaron's going to talk about how he's starting to think, how can him as a station start to archive the stuff that his producers make? So again, there's an institutional, it's memory, and his solution was maps, specifically Google Maps. So that starts tying video to locations in his community that over time can grow, so newer producers can learn from older producers and could even download that its video, re-edit it into their own stories, and again, you start building a history. For instance, in New York, we had a transit strike, you know, last its year, and it was a big deal. It was in all the its media, and I remember talking to older producers who had been around when the previous strike happened, and, you know, people had filmed stuff like that and talking to strikers, but you know what? No one had that its video. You know, oh yeah, there was some guy that had it, but he's no longer around. But if there was some kind of way that this stuff was archived on the internet, someone could have downloaded old interviews that strikers had had and then start, you know, doing what the news stations do. Archival footage is key to pushing the story along. So we're trying to build a way where us as producers, I mean, you know, us as station managers or station workers and producers don't have to reinvent the wheel every time they pick up a camera. So, Aaron, why don't you tell us about your experience?
Okay, so like Jay said, I'm from Iowa City, a public access station there. I'm one of four staff members. We have two programmers, myself as the tech guy, and an executive director. And I basically got hired on to fix analog decks and that kind of thing. We had no website, and we had an old HTML website that was really kind of pitiful and embarrassing. So after about a month of fixing decks, I decided that I was going to be the one to tackle doing some kind of web development. And I have very little experience with any of this, but this sort of happened around the same time that I learned about video blogging and a lot of free applications for making interesting websites, stuff like WordPress, and then there's Drupal and just Blogger. So I started just learning that stuff on my own and learning to post video on the web. And this whole idea of mapping, like I've always been interested in maps, and I think somewhere I came across a link that was a person who had taken Google Maps and done some really sophisticated hack to it with the code and added their own video. And I was like, this is amazing. You can go to this guy's map and you can click on this little point, and I think he had video of a bird's nest that was made out of something weird, like some weird plastic bags, and it was just this thing that he was trying to explain to all of his friends, like, you have to see this bird's nest, it's really amazing, but nobody could ever find it, so he did this Google map of it. And it was just sort of clicked with me, like, wow, this is really interesting. Like, I can look at a map and watch this video and then go there and find it for myself.
And here's a good example of Aaron making that bridge between himself and someone in the open source community. I mean, this is a guy that just built the site, mapbuilder.net.
Yeah, this is previous to this. This was just a Google hack that was really hard. And the thing was, I was really interested in doing it, but it was just beyond, you know, my realm of understanding.
Has anyone ever used Google Maps? You know, it looks like this. Okay. I mean, just for your own benefit, if you need to find anywhere, it's a great thing. Like, it maps it out for you, and I don't know anything now. I just go by the Google Map. So
yeah, so literally, like, a couple of weeks after seeing this guy's site, I came across this site, mapbuilder.net, and it's just a really simple interface. It's just, you upload like your little thumbnail, and then you attach your MPEG file or whatever you have. Any
video. It's in the handout, right?
Yeah, and just really easy to use. And then you can host it on their site. They just give you a link, and you can put that on your website, or you can copy the code if you're a big geek, and you can edit that code and do a lot of different things with that.
How much does it cost?
It's totally free.
It's free?
Yes. So immediately it was like, wow, this is like perfect for public access, and especially a small town like Iowa City. And the fact that we're one of five PEG channels in this little town. So we're sort of seen by our city council as, you know, the people that come to them for money and the people they have to deal with when there's issues of something obscene on air. So I really wanted to, like, change that and do something that our city council and people in our community could go to and look at and say, wow, this has some value. You know, it's not the hour-long church shows on a static camera kind of thing. This is very interactive. So we started this map about 3 months ago, and we have, like, 16 entries now. These are all pretty recent. Stuff that we've assigned interns to do. I'll just...
Can we just kind of scroll around?
Yeah. So you can use the sidebar and click on titles, and then that'll correspond to points on the map.
And you can just grab the map and move it around?
Yeah, you can click on points in the map. You can zoom in, zoom out. You can look at it as a satellite photo, or you can get like the exact street address of where these things are.
Almost too far. I mean, it can go down to an exact house, and
right.
it can show you a picture of the house if you really wanted. So you got to be careful about. But and each little dot would bring up a video.
So what I've done is we've sort of developed projects for our interns where I'll say, hey, go out to this park and shoot a 4-minute video. It can be whatever you want it to be, just shoot a video. And it's a really simple assignment to hand out. It's not like, it's just easier for them to wrap their minds around. And we can also do this with workshops, beginning camera classes. They can actually go out to a park and learn how to use the cameras and also get some good footage that we can later edit and put on our map. And then we also have some like community documentaries on here. We have a little nonfiction thing about a local bakery. And there's all kinds of different forms of nonfiction filmmaking going on here. We have like experimental stuff. We have like straight ahead documentaries, just visual essays. So there's a lot of interesting things you can do with this and incorporate it into this map. So.
Good.
And
did you want to see one of the videos? Or?
Yep. So why don't you show
that
one?
Just click on that one.
Question, go.
Can you also click on the dot to make the video come up, or is that just...
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. So you would click here, and then you click there, and then the video comes up.
Okay. Right.
Yep.
Yeah,
so
either way.
You can click here, and this takes you to the dot. So click another dot. It takes
What's
you
that away. Website?
Mapbuilder.net.
Oh. P-A-T-V dot TV. P-A-T-V dot TV / Iowa City Map.
Dot HTM.
Again, there are handouts that have this, but again, we'll post it on the web and talk to these people afterwards if you really want to get
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so you click on these points, and this the little bubble will come up with like a JPEG or something, and you can put a description of the video. You can put the people that made it. You can put links to their websites. You can put links to a business or whatever. So there's a lot of options with that. And then when you click on the image, a little pop-up window comes up with the video.
And that is a huge thing that, again, I mean, you know, that's something that community television, because TV's ephemeral, I felt has always had a trouble doing, and that's connecting people, taking the conversation beyond just the show. Like, I watch a TV show, it's done, and now what do I do? Well, with stuff like this, you could put links here, you know, to the HSPCA or whatever that is, or even the website of the person that it's made it, you know? So the conversation can continue after I watch it. Go.
As I see this presentation, I think of our town meetings where we spend weeks, and if we're lucky, we'll get a single map to describe what the issue is.
There you
where
go.
The place is regarding zoning or other things. This seems to me as a natural contribution to our covering government activities.
Absolutely. Yep. And you know, and again, because these are free, you could make a million maps for whatever thing you want. Like I've seen it's New York, someone made a pothole map. So they got a map of it's Manhattan. And then would go around with a cell phone and would take a picture of it, would actually send it to the map through his phone, and then there'd be a picture of it with where it was, you know? And the whole idea was to, you know, force local politicians to deal with this problem in its Manhattan bad streets, you know? So again, you can do it for anything. Yes, ma'am.
What about the posters? So is this all the freedom interest?
Yep. It's, I mean, again, this mapbuilder.net is an open source guy. He made the site for free because he's a geek, and it's like a challenge. And like public access people, he just likes to make cool things. And then he's probably got a server in his bedroom or has a $50 server that he hosts in something and gives it for free.
So, I mean, are you limited as far as how much you can store out there?
Not at all. Like, we host all of our video on Blip TV, which is a free hosting service. So that gets us around having to have servers and all that stuff that I just don't want to even get into since I'm like the only tech guy. So I can just host this on their site and then just basically, you know, put this on our website and put an actual address on it.
Yes, sir.
How stable is Blip TV? I mean, right now we can put our videos up there, but what if there's a buyout? What if there's a, you know, whatever? I mean, I remember putting videos on an indie media site 3 years ago, and all those files are gone.
Good. Just archive, I guess. That would be the best thing. Like, I save DV quality files and then also compressed files. So, I mean, when compression gets better, you can always go back and recompress those original files.
Here's a good question here, though. I mean, you know, so we're telling you about free services on the web, and because it's free, it may be a little unstable. I mean, it's pretty stable, but if we're talking about trying to do things that last 10, 20 years from now, you will have to eventually, if this is a real value to you, you got to start thinking about hosting your own stuff. And it's not that big of a deal. You know, you have a server box in your closet somewhere, and you just start hosting it yourself if this stuff is a real value to you. But in the meantime, you can experiment and play, and then you can make that jump. But that's a good question.
It should be noted that there are, you know, there's definitely gotchas with some of these online hosting services. For instance, YouTube, when you submit your video to YouTube, you know, they get a right to like redistribute and do whatever they want with it. You don't give up your rights to the video, but they impose, you know, they take additional rights. Blip doesn't do that, but Blip is a commercial company. They have to eventually start making money. We could ask Mike. I don't actually know their business model.
You know, everyone's trying to figure these things out right now. So.
You know, but there's huge investments going on in this area. You know, we're seeing a little bit of another sort of internet bubble in the online video space. So it's something to be, you know, to tread lightly, I think, with some of these free services. Blip is a good one. The people are respectable.
But there's also archive.org,
right.
And they are kind of like public access for the web, where it's run by a nonprofit, and they're very big into hosting public media for the ages.
Right.
I saw a question in the back. Yes, sir.
Most of our producers, you know, have to sign the disclaimer, the program contract when they become a member. So we use that for people who are producers. And then people who aren't involved, who just send me a link or whatever, if they're just going to have it on the website, then I don't worry about it at all. It belongs to them. If they want to pull it, I'll pull it anytime they want to pull it. If it's going to be on air, then they'll have to come in and fill out those forms.
Yeah, basically it's the same thing. They have to fill out anything that goes on the air. The program agreement still has to be filled out. One of the things that we do have the site, so you could download the PDF form from the website, but that's it right now. And that's one of the things that's really slowing down this process for us, because people who are like doing this kind of stuff, who, you know, they're quick, immediate, they don't want to have to like, you know, download a PDF, you know, print it out, type it, you know, scan it back into the computer, email it or fax it or bring it by. So, I mean, that's one of the things that we would like to, you know,
right.
Start with our new...
This is a good segue here.
Our new website. So that's something that Jacob's working on right now to make it quicker.
So here's what the problem is that you bring up. So now that you have the ability to put media up instantly, how do we deal with that policy change internally, you know? I mean, we're not as used to that. I mean, we like a lot of paperwork, and we got to have boxes of, you know, because the cable companies demand, you know, that you have a paper trail of what media you're putting on the air, and if someone gets in trouble, you got to be able to take something to court, you know. So how do you deal with that? Well, Jacob and Sean here are dealing with that right now, and so Jacob again runs the IT department at MNN, and he's really spearheading making MNN be a place that can accept video from people in their bedrooms that would then play on the air. And this is important because, again, you know, we really need to reach out to the younger people that get this, you know, the people that see that these are just toys, that making its media is like breathing and that it's not a big deal. And if we don't reach out to them, they will just, you know what, they'll just swim around us and go far ahead, and then when your producers die, you'll have nothing left. Okay. Question real quick, and then...
The low-cost realm here, is there any options for longer format video?
Yeah, I mean, right now, the internet seems like it better handles short its video for two its reasons. I mean, one is, it takes a long time to download a half-hour TV show. But that's going to change. The other thing is that most people don't want to watch a half-hour video on their computer. So there's two things. But again, these things will change when people have big TVs and they can download stuff. But right now, short seems to make sense. Go.
Just kind of following that up, I'm thinking government meetings on demand, like where you can say where that seems to be very popular, and you can play a million times on the channel and that's still, you know, convenient enough for some folk.
Yeah.
Some very few stations to archive a whole, you know, past meetings.
Anything is possible if you're willing to put in the time to kind of figure it out. So it is possible. Go quick.
I just wanted to address that. Google Video does not have a size limit. And I put my 28-minute program up there to archive it. And I see public meetings archived there that are hours long. And I don't know whoever goes to watch them, but they're there if they want to.
Okay, so I'm going to hand it over to Jacob and then Sean.
I just want to do a quick thing on that.
So, there you go.
No, I don't. So I'm Jacob. Another. Maybe. Okay, so I'll hold it like this. I came to the public access world about 8 months ago from actually the wonderful corporate world. I worked for Intel just before this, so I kind of came from this understanding of very large companies, very big networks, and now I'm here down in public access, and everything is really old. And it took me a while to catch up, and I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there, but MNN, when I got there, was using an old FileMaker database to do everything, and these things just don't lend well to getting out on the web. I mean, you're never going to be able to get your schedules and archive and everything out on the web if you're constantly pulling things from like an Access database or FileMaker database. So we had to make a really big shift internally. So one of the things I really kind of grabbed really quickly was to move these things web-based. And one of the first projects I started on was to rebuild our entire database. And we're just starting on that now, about a month ago or so. But that just gets our internal database, how to do reservations and schedule things and get that all online, which we're moving towards. But one of the other things I really wanted the public access to get involved in.
Back up real quick. So, and what you guys are building is open source, and the hope is that any one of you could use what he's building. Like, right now, a lot of you probably use...
Facile.
It's Facile, which everyone, you know, pays into, but there may be another alternative. Right?
Yeah. So kind of on that same thing, I mean, one of the bigger thing other than just redoing our database is what I really wanted to move people into was open source. I mean, there's public access stations obviously around the country everywhere that are doing pretty much the exact same thing, but the software doesn't work. You know, I can't go from one access center to the next and exchange data very easily, or look up on their website and say, what are you doing? Or if I wrote something really cool for my access station that worked, I can't just give it to you. You know, I would have to rewrite it for your access station. And that was one of the first things I said was, this has to stop. So we're developing in Drupal. Everything we do is open source. We're now involved with NYU and some other groups. And everything we're doing is open source.
No more vendor lock-in.
Yeah. So you have a question?
I have a question. When you say open source, what does that mean?
So what open source means is, like, I'm a developer. I write code. And if I write the software, I will give it to you for free, for no charge, and you can use it however you want. Provided that if you do something to it, you also give it free of charge to other people. That's the basic model. So the things we're doing at M&N, which is quite literally rebuilding Facile from the ground up in a program called Drupal, we expect to be done in about 6 months, it will literally be free of charge to anybody. And the reason why we're doing it that way is because, and we've already seen this happening, is we want to give it to other stations and allow them to modify it, and we get the changes back, and they get something that works for them. So without even actually having a working product now, we have about 5 stations and 2 vendors online helping us. And this is just because they benefit from what we benefit from and such. As a good example, Snippets TV. Snippets TV kind of is in that project, which we got with NYU, and they had built this software that he'll explain in just a minute. And one of the things that M&N requested was that if we were going to partner with them and get this working at our station, we wanted it to be open source. We wanted something that we were using at M&N to be able to be plugged into any other access center without them having to, you know, buy it, license it, have somebody come on site and custom develop it. We just want them to go to a website, download it, and that's it. And this stuff can be installed by anybody. What's that?
Project X. No, it's gotten known. I don't know. Wait.
Yeah, at this point, we're just calling it Peg Station Management. But to segue over to Scott here, who's in the corner there, he created a great website called pegspace.org. Which is where we are all starting to collaborate on this stuff. You'll start hearing a lot of Drupal, Peg Station Management, Snippet TVs. You may have heard of Digital Bicycle, Mapping Access, Producers Forum. These are all Drupal and open source based projects that anybody can grab for free and use.
And just real quick, I mean again, don't let any of this scare you, because again, there are people in your community that do stuff like this. These open source communities are there. I mean, in wherever it is you are, I promise you there's someone in your community that understands this and that you could bring them in to help you. And just imagine if 500 plus stations start to use this open source platform, the vendors will have to support what we do versus wanting to keep us all separate and sell us all separate packages into, you know, Microsoft-based formats.
My question sort of diversifies a little bit from subject a little bit, but with this technology where these producers are, you know, creating their own content and posting it on their own, how would a public access station entice these people to produce content for that station?
Ooh, that was very good. So did everybody hear that?
No.
Okay. So her question was, because of these technologies are encouraging producers to go out to the web, how does, and make sure I get this right, how does the Cable Access Center encourage them and bring them in to the Access Center? You know, instead of just being in the room, they got to come to the Access Center. And that's actually one of the reasons why. Where'd Sean go?
He went to the bathroom. The web apps are going to stall. Right?
Well, that's actually one of the reasons why we have Vlog TV and Snippets TV, because what Snippets TV, and he'll explain the technology behind it and how it works, but what we're doing with it is we're merging these two television shows. We're allowing people to go to our website, and we're going to do this for our fall schedule, so this is like September for us, but we're going to allow them to go to our website, upload a clip, and that will actually be part of one show. And during that show, it's to encourage people to say, hey, you did a 5-minute show. Did you know you can make this more professional? Did you know you can learn Final Cut? We offer those classes. Come to our station, learn more, and maybe you're interested. Maybe you want to make a half-hour show or an hour or a documentary. We can teach you those skills.
Or maybe you would want to come to a station and connect to other people. Because there was something very enabling about being able to be in your bedroom and make your own It's Media and get it out to the world. But you know what? There's also a power of enticing people to come in to work with other people, to meet with people of similar backgrounds and sympathies and build something together.
So it's like Anne kind of said, it's really just one more tool to offer. It's not replacing everything. It's one more thing. Okay, so I'll stall a little bit. But so Sean's here, and Snippets TV. What Snippets TV is there's two parts to it. And he'll be explaining this. And here he comes.
Here he comes, everybody.
But, I mean, so the idea here is to offer a way to get, especially younger people, to be uploading video they make and give it to you without having to come and fill in a lot of forms, but to do it electronically, like you were suggesting in the back, and then allow it to be on demand. So that way, you know, it's not just ephemeral, but that then it's available throughout time and then can be watched when they want. And that helps you get your word out because they can then send a link to your site. And then your site, which will have all this, its video, will then start moving around the web. And as we all know, the web is the best connecting technology we have right now. So, Sean, it's all you.
You gotta have to hold it.
I hate technology. Technology hates me. I mean, I'm going to stand up and shout. If you guys don't mind.
I'm going to stand over here and shout. So I'm Sean Vannevery. I'm a researcher at a program at NYU called the Interactive Telecommunications Program. If you don't know ITP, which you probably don't, it actually started as the Alternative Media Center about 25 years ago. The Center for Alternate Media about 25 years ago. George Stoney and Red Burns, who are, you know, sort of, I think, you know, parents of this community as well. One of the things that I look at ITP or that I research is participatory media. And so a lot of what we're talking about here fits both within the history of ITP as well as the sort of new technology and the new research. So I've been doing a lot of things with M&M recently, and I'm not going to talk too much about what community television is and what internet video is, but I want to talk about what if the two things that we've been discussing, television and online video, started to play together, right? How do we really enable what's happening on the internet to start happening on television? So Jacob approached me recently about Snippet TV, which is really a way to allow people to upload content to your website, to any peg station website, allow it to be scheduled and played on air at any time. So basically, what is it? It's producers upload and add metadata to content.
What is metadata?
Metadata is like title, description, length of time. What else is metadata? Okay. file format, all that kind of stuff. And then we have another portion of it, which is sort of peg station run, which is sort of like the administrator portion of it, which allows the administrators to go in and review the media that's been uploaded, to check it out, to see if it's appropriate, and to basically schedule a playback time. And then the last part is a broadcast-ready sort of playback system. Okay? And what we're doing is we're developing this on the Drupal platform, which is this open source CMS, content management system, that M&N is working with and that hopefully other peg stations will be working with. And that's Drupal, and that's PHP, and it has a really active sort of developer community around it. One of the good sites to show that's Drupal-based is R Media. I really encourage you to check out R Media if you haven't in the past. It's sort of a showcase site for what, you know, perhaps rethinking community media in the internet world. You know, how people participate with media, how they comment on it, how they reference each other, how they're using sort of these new tools in the online video world. And also, you know, as a counterpoint, I would check out YouTube, which is, you know, really becoming, this sort of mass media of internet media or of internet video. So I would check those out to really see what the excitement is that people are seeing behind all of this and how it's a little different from what we were all, or what you were all thinking about 25 years ago. And perhaps, you know, thinking about ways that these can be merged. And that's what I've been thinking about. And that's what sort of Snippet TV is all about. So, like I said, there's a content management system which any producer can go to, upload their video. You can browse other people's videos. You can possibly down the road rate and comment and do all the things that you can do on things like YouTube and our media. And then the second portion of it is the playback system, right? And this is also being developed with open source software, all free, all open source, all available to hack, to make your own, to build on top of. And what it is, it's Linux. It's software called MPlayer, which can play a myriad of different formats. So we sort of do away with a lot of the issues with different file formats and codecs and things like that.
Here is very important, because this is what all the hackers kids use when they download like copyrighted TV shows and stuff. They use this because it plays any format. So that way we don't get into the problem of we all have to use the same exact format. Now we can all create different QuickTime windows, whatever you want.
Right.
This will play it. And that solves a huge problem.
Right. So it doesn't have to be MPEG-2 content. It doesn't have to be encoded in this specific way. MPlayer can deal with, you know, just about anything out there. And if they use something it doesn't deal with, we can detect that when they upload the file and say, hey, we don't deal with this. Go ahead. Okay, so this is a whole playback system, right? So there's a computer running Linux, and it's got a big hard drive, basically, or it's connected to an external big hard drive, a storage area network. And then MPlayer is running full screen on this computer inside of a Mozilla browser. Mozilla is Netscape, if anybody doesn't know. It's also open source. And so MPlayer is running inside this Mozilla browser, and we can script the Mozilla player through JavaScript, if you've heard of JavaScript. And so in a sense, whatever's on the screen, whatever we display on the screen, can be piped out via as video, composite, or whatever other type of connection you need into the broadcast system.
See, to me, this is really exciting. So all we're saying is you'll need a hard drive or videos will be on a hard drive, and then you simply have a computer in your master control, and you'll just be playing its video on your laptop even at full screen, and that will be pumped into your channels, and it looks fine. So we aren't talking about having huge broadcast its machines to do this. You're basically just taking a simple computer and playing
right.
It on the air.
I mean, it's a powerful computer. Don't get us wrong, but it's a cheap, powerful computer. Something like this can be installed for less than $1,000. The software is all free.
Can I send this to my server?
So what this is we have a web platform, right? And that's what's being built on Drupal. So this web platform is something where producers or whoever you allow can go, upload their content, perhaps look at other content that's already up there in a YouTube way or in our media type of way, browse it, search it, and so on, perhaps comment on it. And then when they upload content, it goes into this, you know, big hard drive that you need to have as part of this system. At M&N, they're building a storage area network, which is a networked hard drive, basically. And then there's this playback system, which pulls the media off of that hard drive based upon a schedule that an administrator would decide. Or perhaps you can empower the community to do that. There's a lot of directions we could take this. So it should be mentioned that this is under development at the moment.
The good news is you let M&N figure out all the problems and make it work. So get his email, and then he'll give it to you in a working condition.
Right. It's
just because we're running out of time. Maybe we should just hold off on questions real quick and then just finish this up.
Yeah, let me just...
Because I think Elias is going to have a lot of questions on master control and everything, and I can answer those, but it'll only take about 2-3 minutes.
So on pegspace.org, we have the project description. We just set up a Yahoo group for anybody who's sort of interested in learning more about this, perhaps contributing, or even like helping us, you know, decide some features and direction. We're at the point where we have a functional spec. We have the various pieces, the various components installed, and what we're doing now is customizing and building to the spec that MNN has put forth. So if any of you are interested in sort of contributing to that effort, please join, and we'd be happy to talk. So yeah, let's open it up for questions. I think I used a lot of terms and I skipped over a whole bunch of things that you should ask about.
And real quick, those of you that is wanting to bump up your geek knowledge even more, at 3:45 I heard at a tech bar, which is in the vendor area, there's going to be a whole thing on, it's Drupal. So you can go and there'll be Drupal developers there and they can maybe talk to you a little bit more about how that works.
Okay, I just want to address some quick questions because I know we had, like, how does this work with my server? How do I get in the playback system? And I just want to kind of answer those quickly. At MNN, what we're doing is, this is not replacing our playback system. We actually have our digital playback system right now is Synergy. We've been talking with Princeton. We're rebuilding. This is absolutely, it's completely separate from that. They will set up a box in our master control. The web server will interact with that box, and that box will play the content. And we're just taking the video feed into our router and switching to it. It's just a switch event. It says, pull that video from there, put it on air. It's completely separate.
Just pretend it's a deck.
Yeah, pretend it's a VHS deck, a DV deck, or something like that. Yeah.
I was just going to say, so basically, you're scheduling this as a regular program.
Exactly.
Do the VOD stuff.
Yeah, for right now what we're doing is it's not VOD, it's not anything very crazy, it's just we're going to be taking a 1-hour show to begin with, and we're saying between 6, I don't know what the time is, but between 6 and 7, switch to that box, play whatever you get from it, just as if you're playing from a VHS, because it's new, we're saying, so.
Is it automated, or is it hands-on?
It's both, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, so it could be fully... You know, you could set it up to be fully automated, just play whatever people upload, you know, right after another. Or you could hands-on schedule, hey, I want this one in the playlist, and then this one, and then this one. It's totally up to you.
Is this the tool that you would use to put the video blogs on?
So this is a little different from, you know, sort of supporting video blogs, right? So... Because there's a whole separate upload mechanism for this, it doesn't tie right into doing video blogs. So you have to upload your media to this as well as upload it to your video blog if you want it on your video blog. That's not to say they can't merge sometime down the road, but it'll make what Anne's been doing a lot easier, you know, for doing that vlog TV show. So people can just submit their video through this, put the appropriate information, and then her show is done, basically. There's a lot.
What happens to free in the event this legislation proceeds in Washington? All this free stuff.
Right. Well, this is being developed completely open source, so it'll always be open source. It'll always be there.
I just want to think that, like, if something does happen legislatively and we lose our channels, we have this outlet still. We have something still, like, so we don't immediately, you know, we can still, we've already got people used to going to websites and looking at things. So now we say, well, okay, the channel's gone, but you can still go to the website. You know, at least there's some alternative there, and this is getting people to that path right now.
And it's also, you know, it's really bridging what people are doing online and bringing it into television. It's really exciting to see all the things happening on YouTube, but it would be even more exciting if, like, hey, you can put that on TV. It can really leverage the power of television. It can have an audience that television has. It doesn't have the cost issues with distribution, bandwidth, and all that type of stuff.
Yeah,
just to get a little more clarity.
Yes.
Is this like, not to bring like a big corporation into it, but like, is this like MTV's Overdrive?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, it's very much like.
But those aren't sort of producer contributed content. It's more like current TV.
Okay.
It's a lot like current TV, actually.
Because I didn't quite
right.
see it, and that just kind of gave me more.
Yeah, but it can be thought of as like Overdrive. You know, sort of like audience participation.
So it's like the playlist.
There's one playlist, and it's going on TV, right? So you could have an online playlist, but that's not its core. That's not its core functionality.
Could you be a little more specific about the upload and how you would instruct people
right.
what to do to upload content?
So first of all, I think that they'd need guidelines. How do you compress video? You know, how do you put it in a format that you can send it via the internet to a service like this? So that's the first step, a little bit of education. And I think that there's a lot of resources that we've already put together that we can reuse for that. You know, what codec to choose, what bit rate, and stuff like that. As far as uploading it, basically you're gonna, if you've ever filled out a form online, you know, name, email address, blah, 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 you're basically filling out a form just like that. But there's one additional button, and it says browse or select video, right? So you click that button, and you get a file browser on your computer, and you select the video, and then you wait an infinite amount of time for it to upload.
Are you recommending
MP4
for uploads at this point? Or?
Well, MPlayer, what's really great about MPlayer is it can handle so many different formats. I personally think that H.264 is, it's MPEG-4 plus, is probably the best codec at the moment for this type of thing. But if they wanted to upload MPEG-2 and they, you know, it was a 50 megabyte file and they had the bandwidth or they had the time, it's up to them. You know, it's up to the producer. Of course, you could put limits on it. You know, that would be a configuration option when you install this. You could put limits on the size.
But you're not putting limits on what format they would use to upload.
The only limit is that MPlayer can play it back.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick comment, too, because that's one of the reasons why we're doing this versus using a VBrick or the Synergy Systems or Princeton Server Group is because on digital playback systems, you must adhere to this MPEG-2 standards. And I've been through this for the past 6 months with every single vendor. And we don't want that. This is for short format, small things that we want people just to get to us. And we don't need to teach them, what you need to do is MPEG-2 with this one, to do a transport stream with this bitrate, with that. It's too much. What we want to be able to say is open up iMovie, say share, movie, upload. You're done. Like, we don't need to teach them all the compression. That's what comes later, is once they've done this and they want to have a half-hour show or an hour show or collaborate, then they start the learning process, how to properly use your camera, how to properly compress. We got to get them in the door first. You can't just expect them to know what MPEG-2 is.
You guys are using Blogspot for your video blogs. Can you say why you've chosen that? There's a number of different alternatives. Why Blogspot?
I mean, I think my doing there. We use Blogger. Blogger.com is owned by Google, and they are a blogging platform, and we just started to tell people to do that just because it's probably the easiest thing out there that I could find, and Google will probably be around for a long time, so you know that the content you put in there will be there. And they seem it's respectful of your ownership. So, but like this gentleman says, there are other blogging platforms as well. There's WordPress. There's a million different things.
What do you recommend?
Blogger. Yep.
It's to each his own, right? I recommend WordPress.
I mean, the other thing is that there's also on freevlog.org. There's also, there's actually walkthroughs, like video walkthroughs, and then also text walkthroughs.
What do you mean by walkthroughs?
There's a video
tutorial that actually is a screencast of your computer screen that walks you through the installation and signing up and doing everything.
On which one?
Freevlog.org. It's on that handout.
Freeblog.org.
And it will also be put up on the a website here under this section. So we have, we still got time, 10 minutes, so let's get your questions in.
Not so much a question, but merely a point that I didn't hear exercised very much. And you made that point, is in case something ever happens to our channels, this could be a fallback for us. That's not true unless net neutrality is supported.
Yeah.
It's
completely meaningless about it, and we need to become much more supportive of that and concerned and active about that.
Yeah, if you haven't heard, I mean, that's a great point. If you haven't heard of net neutrality, you really need to hear about net neutrality and get behind it, understand it. It's just as important as COPE, as Save Access, because, yeah, I mean, two avenues are being attacked. Your channels are being attacked, and if you want to go over the internet, that's being attacked. So if you haven't heard about net neutrality, grab somebody, grab me after, grab him after, and just talk about it, because you need to know about it.
And on the converse of that, if net neutrality, if like levels of service are implemented and people sort of lose the ability to watch online video, things like Snippet TV become even more relevant, so you can submit and then you can watch on television. Unless they take public access away, right? So. Yes. Codec is compress, decompress. It's a conjunction of those two words. It's basically an algorithm, a mathematical algorithm that's used to shrink video down. It's compression. It's the like method of compression. So I personally like to start with like blogs and wikis, right? Blogs, for those of you who don't know, are sort of the epitome of what a text-based sort of conversation that's not broadcast can happen on the internet, right? Blogs have two unique attributes. One is a comment form on the bottom of every single entry, every single article, where anybody can go and leave a comment, and it actually shows up right with the original text of the article, and it really engages people in a two-way conversation. The other thing that they have is something called trackbacks. Trackbacks are an automated way to link blogs that are talking about similar topics together. So really exploring the concept of blogging as opposed to like magazine publishing or like newspaper publishing, you know, where there is a true two-way conversation happening. And then wikis are a free-form way for anybody to contribute to a website. You click an edit button, and you have control to edit, and you can see, like, versions, what people have done. And so those are two sort of tremendous tools for any type of online organizing. And there's tons more, you know, like meetup.com, I'm sorry, for, you know, scheduling physical meetings. You know, there's a whole wide range of things on Yahoo and on Google for managing groups, for managing mailing lists, for creating websites. So really, you know, using the things that are hosted out there for you is a good way to get people, you know, building community in a digital way around things.
I just want to remind you of something that Anne brought up earlier, that the way we did it at MNN was that we invited
the local bloggers and video bloggers and podcasters to our station and had an event and basically just gave the microphone to them with some, you know, prompting, and then just had them start explaining to the TV producers what's going on and get them into a conversation. Because unfortunately, blogging has been around since like 96, and it's kind of, again, like been kind of a parallel to us, but have never really come into our station. And a lot of them just don't see us as a resource. You know, a lot of bloggers see public access stations as one of the problems, centralized, you know, bureaucracy, and that bloggers love the fact that they can just do it on their own and connect to people directly. And we have to break down that barrier and invite them in and get them involved and make them teachers and all that stuff.
Did you have some things to add?
Yeah. About? Well, I mean, you can just basically, you can use these things to organize your video any way you want to. You know, anyway, like you can organize around community issues. You can organize around ideas. You know, you have a local environmental problem, and you can get all, you know, different community groups and different people in the community affected by this issue and create a blog about it. So it's a centralized location where, like, a history of it, a history is, and that you could go out and you can demonstrate this to people. Look at what's going on in this community. Here's, you know, 5 different videos, pictures, text, whatever, that creates a history of like what's actually going on, and it's real, and you can use that tool to organize people.
Aaron, did you do that? All right. Unfortunately, we've got to end this. Let me tell you a couple things real quick.
One is, I believe that this session was, it's recorded in audio. Is that right? Yep, so it will be posted, the whole audio of this whole conversation here will be posted to the website. We will also make sure, I'll get Ann and Sean and Jacob and Aaron to post their handouts also on the website so you can download it. Everyone's contact info is there as well, so keep this conversation going. If you have taken any kind of notes or pictures, I've been asked, we run it. So if you want to, if you feel you've done some good documentation, you'll come and talk to me, and I'll tell you who to give it to in electronic form so we can, again, get all this stuff in one place so we can start sharing its knowledge here. I want to really thank the panel up here. They've done a really good job making this easy. And again, you can never learn anything in just an hour and a half. You have to be proactive about this and start connecting to me or these people, and let's keep the conversation going. All right? Thanks a lot, guys.